Nobody in the house.
Ooh. Let me guess, you're not wearing pants.
You'll never know.
You'll tell us on the show.
Nope. You'll never know.
You know who else will never know?
These guys, our sponsors.
That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. Subject, advertising. Thanks.
Believe it or not, kids.
Premature sponsoring? Is that what we got here?
Oh, I like that. Premature sponsoring.
Premature sponsoring.
Get it out of the way early. Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires is Joe, making a mess writer. Joe, how you doing?
I am swinging into action as Spider-Man because I got me one of them Nature Valley crunchy granola bar boxes where I can scan this box to transform myself into Spider-Man and then save the day as I battle his worst enemies in their exclusive Spider-Man web shooter game. Let's see, I gotta download the app.
Oh, it's an app.
And I aim the front of the box and watch it come to life. Scary! Turn it off! Turn it off! Woo!
I thought maybe you'd bought those Spider-Man pajamas you were talking about.
No, no, sadly, although I was in Duluth again.
You were?
What we will talk about. We didn't go to Target.
Oh.
We should have. We were close. We drove right by it.
You know, you could still go get them.
Ah, not the same.
You could order them online.
Nope, not the same.
You could have your wife make you a bear.
To join the groups that are trying their damnedest to put retailing as we know it out of business by just ordering everything online.
Joe, where do you get your comics?
You know, the sad thing is, you know, it's funny. We're going to talk about that. The funny thing is that if for as much heat as Walmart gets, nobody gives Amazon much heat.
You know why?
Because you can order things and they deliver right to you.
Because you don't have to put up with Amazon's terrible customer service in person.
That is true.
And
although you are wrong in one respect, Walmart doesn't have customer service.
Well, there is that.
That's definitely not there.
Yeah, right. And I think it's because it's Walmart versus Amazon, and it's kind of like, well, who do you hate more? I hate Walmart more.
Yeah.
And Walmart won't let you sell your stuff. You can't go to Walmart, set up a table, and sell your stuff.
Oh, you can. They'll just come take your table away.
And it call the police.
Yep.
And the table you can't police. Go to Walmart anymore.
Well, that
one. We had an artist I interviewed who, that's what he did at conventions. He would buy a ticket to a convention, and then he would set up his own table until they got him. I thought that was amazing.
Actually, that's pretty, I've been reading that Strip Devil's Panties, and
yes.
The creator talks about how she just sets up at, like, the bottom of an escalator. Every year, everybody knows she's there. At least that was my take on some of the early strips. And then later on, there are some where she's actually at a table.
Guerrilla marketing. So if you want to buy gorillas.
Just like Corey does. Every web strip he works on, including those that never existed, because I guess Superboy punched a wall or something.
Superboy punched a wall. Somebody got sad.
He was always a monkey. I don't know what it is about Corey when he thinks monkeys are funny. He must be living in the 50s DC universe or something.
Damn right. Hey. Marvel had monkeys, too.
Yeah, that was only when Frank Cho came around.
No. You had the Red Ghost and the Super Apes.
Ah, they weren't the same. They were subservient to some Red Ghost.
Gore the Golden Gorilla, the first modern Fantastic Four comic I bought. Cover of it, Gore the Golden Gorilla.
You can tell me if Kirby was ever on drugs or not, but what the hell was he thinking with Red Ghost? Those apes.
Everybody likes apes.
Ugh.
And Red Ghost, well, you know, he's a commie.
I mean, they can't all be winners. I mean, you know, can't have a Black Panther every time you come out of the shoot, but still.
Cole Tiger.
Ugh.
That was his original name, you know. I learned something I did not know about the Black Panther and the Inhumans, by the way. What it was, Marvel sales were taking off. And Martin Goodman actually went to the head of National Periodicals and said, look, we're making you more money. We would like to have more slots. Don't you? And so they negotiated, and Goodman thought he was going to be able to print a certain number of books. So he went to Stan and said, hey, Stan, start getting ready. We're going to expand. And then at the last minute, National Periodicals said, no, we think that's too many. So that's why Black Panther got into the Fantastic Four, as did the Inhumans. Some other ideas got merged in with other comics. So there you go. That's a little piece of history. Another little piece of history I learned, by the way, Joe.
I have a quick question, though.
Okay.
You got your fan going?
Yes, I do, because it's 190 degrees.
I know.
But I will turn it off for the listeners.
Because the thought of Corey sweating, this is SonaCon. It actually pleases me, folks.
SweatCon is what it was called.
Yep.
What year was that?
He is going to have, I'd have to look it up, because it was one of the times I actually have something from, I can't think of his name. Rich Kolowski.
Yeah, Rich Kolowski.
Hit one of his characters, you know, SweatCon. Tis a bit moist.
Most of the artists that, it was back when it was still a 2-day in the fall, because it was Sunday that it was so terrible.
That's a Edumacation building, which is the same place that the Fall Comic-Con.
Fall Con's always in the Edumacation building.
Yep.
You need to get edumacated.
That'll actually drop, let's see, that's October 7th, so it'll still be almost a week and a half away. So you still got time to go online to get advanced tickets. And, of course, you can come see me, since I'll be the only one there. Just
the
me.
The only person there.
My first annual final sale. So I'm very excited.
First annual goodbye sale.
And you actually got to see part of the $1 book conglomerates that I had also.
Yes, I did. If you're looking to fill in your collection, if you're looking for nice long runs of superhero books, if you're looking to pick up stuff from the previous free comic book days, Joe's got it.
And they're all going to be a buck. Pretty much everything's in place. There's a few bits that I'll probably be throwing in, and we'll talk about that as the con goes on. But it was even edumacational because Corey discovered something while he was digging through the dollar box and went out and found the answer. So sometimes Corey asks the Strode himself.
I thought it was interesting because there was a bunch of 70s Archies, and they had a little Fawcett thing on the cover. And, you know, Fawcett used to publish comics. They were the ones who published Captain Marvel. And then when it was no longer profitable, they sold it to DC. But a lot of people say, you know, you read a lot of comics history, and they go, and that was when Fawcett was done publishing comic books. No, they actually made a lot of money off the Dennis the Menace comics, which they published into the 70s. But they also had a distribution arm, and from 71 to 83, they were the ones who distributed Archie comics. Now, Joe knows a little about Fawcett that I don't, because you've lived here in Minnesota your whole life.
Actually, I think you were the one who pointed it out to me. I mean, fair is fair, you know.
Isn't there one of the towns here has a Fawcett Days or a Captain Whatever Days or... They have a festival that started as a celebration of Fawcett publications.
Ooh, do tell.
Oh, you didn't know about that?
That would have to be because C.C. Beck was born in some Brota, Minnesota.
No, it's because Fawcett's headquarters was in Minnesota.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yes.
I knew the C.C. Beck connection, but I did not realize that.
Yeah, let me pull it up here. They were founded in Robbinsdale, Minnesota. And let's see, they did Gold Medal Books, which published a lot of the men's adventure paperbacks and things like that. There is a 4-day festival held in Robbinsdale, Minnesota called Whiz Bang Days. And believe it or not, the first publication from Fawcett was Captain Billy's Whiz Bang, which was a bawdy cartoon and joke magazine. But no, it's the Whiz Bang Days are from Fawcett Publications. I thought you knew that.
No. Maybe we'll have to go figure out when this festival is and check it out.
Let me take a look. I'm clicking on Robbinsdale, Minnesota for Whiz Bang Days. It's probably in the summer, knowing these things.
Yeah.
Whiz Bang Days. Go to the Strode-tron 2000. It was July 6th and July 7th in 2017.
Next year.
Oh, sorry. It also went on the 8th and the 9th. So you can go to whizbangdays.org.
Well, it was the 70th
Whiz Bang Days.
We'll have to pencil that into our calendar, and maybe we'll check it out next time.
And there is a Whiz Bang Day committee you can join, Joe. Let's see what some of the events were. Friday events. There was the Bistro on Broadway. There was the Whiz Bang Youth Baseball. The Whiz Bang Days Block Party. Food vendors, beer tent, band, and more. Music by the Sticky Lifters.
Looks like they had a parade, too.
Yeah.
And fireworks.
Let's see. Saturday was usually the big day for these things. Let's see. Annual car show. Bocce ball tournament. The Whiz Bang Bags tournament. Wicked Warp Brewing Company outdoor tent party. The annual Whiz Bang Days talent show. The free Three Rivers Park District Activity Sampler, and a Robbinsdale City Band Concert. So,
speaking of which, I might have to take a whiz here. Oh, jeez. So all this history, and we'll have to put it on our calendar, just like what we did, was it last weekend? Corey and I decided to
abscond.
forego going to the comic card con down at the Bloomington VFW, which friends of mine came and asked me if I'd gone, and I said I didn't. And they said there weren't a lot of people at it.
What a shock. The Bloomington VFW, right?
Yeah.
This time
around. They move around. And it's usually
now, if they're at the Bloomington Armory, I have fond memories of the Bloomington Armory. You know why?
Is that where you first became a man in the back seat of a Chevy van?
No, that is where I saw my one and only AWA show, as they were they weren't dead, but they were coughing up blood.
Yeah, no, I think I'd given up long ago.
I think it was like 88 or 89, and the main event was Buck Rock and Roll Zumoff against Red Tyler. Not exactly your main event there, kid.
Pre or post Red Rooster?
No, Red Tyler.
Oh, Tyler.
Yeah, Red Tyler. And the only reason I knew about it is because one of my coworkers was Red Tyler's brother.
You know, speaking of which,
Red Tyler was one of the guys who, whenever they came to Minnesota to film TV, he was the guy who would look at the lights.
Now that you brought it up, I think I'll just squeeze horn it in the podcast. I picked up a book called Minnesota's Golden Age of Wrestling, from Vern Gagne to the Road Warriors. And this pretty much covers all of the they started out in the NWA, and then they formed the AWA. And it's kind of interesting because they don't really talk a lot about what was going on behind the scenes, but rather they talk about what was actually going on in the ring.
Oh, you know, so it's a kind of a kayfabe book.
It is, but it isn't, because they already, you know, exposed that it isn't kayfabe. They also print a lot of things from a magazine called Sports Facts, which went for the longest time. I mean, you're talking all the way back in the 40s, and would always talk about different things about what's going on. Big one was, of course, that Lou Thesz was ducking Vern Gagne and wouldn't give him a chance at the title, which is part of what got the AWA going, because they couldn't get the NWA champ up here. And I'm about in the 80s. Late 70s, actually, before I started watching. But it was after the Crusher became a good guy. The High Flyers were on the stage.
That was when I watched. Crusher was my hero.
Let's see. World Tag Team titles were held by Blackjack Lanza and Bobby Duncan. The Heenan family was coming to town. Super Destroyer was still around. So it's actually kind of a fun book. I haven't gotten up to the point you were reading. But they really talk a lot about how AWA was really big on tag team wrestling, more so than it is nowadays. But kind of a fun book. I would have been more interested in the actual, you know, what was going on behind the scenes, you know, what was the final break to get Gagne and it was Wally Carbo, and there was somebody else involved in the territory, because they had two promoters. Wally was Minneapolis, and then there was another guy, I'd have to dig up his name, that was St. Paul. And of course, by the time I got there, it was all AWA, and you know, I remember watching it on, I think it was started on Channel 11, but then Channel 9, Sunday morning, All Star Wrestling.
Featuring the stars of the
AWA. So, one of the guys who saw the book I'm reading looks on and goes, "Is that Brock Lesnar?" I said, no, Brock Lesnar was never in the AWA. It looks like Brock Lesnar. I don't know. It's actually the Crusher being body slammed by someone I hadn't heard of before. Moose Evans, who was big in the 50s and 60s. Wow, that really looks like Brock Lesnar. I said, well, it's not, so stop saying Brock Lesnar.
But no, we absconded out of town.
We did. We took a run, which is, you're not a true Minnesotan until you go up north. And
this was my third trip up north.
Yep. Although you did wuss out on going to Itasca in the rain. I like Itasca in the rain.
Well, you'll be happy about my trip in October then.
Oh, well, no, because I'm not going.
I am going down to see my parents. But I'm not going the route I usually take. I'm going to actually take 2 days and go down the Mississippi River Road.
Yep. actually did that.
First week of October, it's going to be pretty.
I actually did that on the way up. We flew into Memphis, my wife and I, and paid respects to the king and all that, and then we took the river road north, kind of skipped around St. Louis because we'd been there a number of times, and it was actually fun. There's actually a couple books you can get, and if I can, I don't know if I still have them. I'll forward them your way.
I've got an app.
Screw the app. This was actually the worst decision you got to make, actually the best decision you got to make, is which side of the river do you want to ride on? Because the most scenic parts of the river are in Minnesota because they're not hidden behind these massive earthen, dikes and that. So that you can decide, do you want to go down the Minnesota side and look at the cliffs, or do you want to go down the Wisconsin side? And either way, you're close to the river. There's different things to look at, different places to stop. And, we had a pretty good time. But the question I had for Corey, are you going to stop at all the comic shops on the way?
If there are any, yes.
Well, there's one. Jimmy, what's the one? There's one in Winona. Let's see if I can find it here.
I like Winona.
It's a nice town. It's really pretty.
It's a town?
It is.
Oh, I thought you meant Winona Ryder.
You just don't know much about Minnesota, do you?
No,
Jimmy Jams.
I don't leave the house much.
Jimmy Jams, a one-stop shop for comic, graphic novels, manga, role-playing, and collectible card games. You'll probably like it because it's a throwback shop. I don't know if these guys have ever come to our comic shows up here in Minnesota or Minneapolis, but these guys have been around forever. And you go right down. And I guess it depends on what day you go.
It'll be a Monday.
I don't know if they're open Monday or not. But
bastards.
You can
knock
go
on
there.
Until they do open.
Take a look at their Facebook page here. So there's one I give you, Jimmy Jams down in Winona. I always stop usually when I get a chance to go up or down. They have a store that has transformed themselves over the years. I mean, they went from like a big old-fashioned, old-time comic shop to one that had not as many comics, a lot of graphic novels, but just tons of CDs and DVDs. And now I'm looking, it looks like they've transformed themselves to game. They're doing more Magic, more game events. So, yeah, I would definitely stop there. And then, you know, that was like when I used to be on the road. Oh, by the way, the address is 113 East 3rd Street in Winona, Minnesota there. If you, just look at the towns on the way down. Are you going to be on the Illinois side or the Iowa side of the...
I haven't decided yet.
Well,
see, one of the cool things about the app is it's got a GPS in the app. And when you get near cool things, it'll go, hey, do you want to see this scenic overlook? Hey, do you want to look over here? Do you want to go over there? So I'll be planning it out like a couple days before I go. But I'm taking 2 days because I'm going to stop everywhere. It's like when I went to New Orleans. I took 3 days, actually, because I went to my parents. And then I went a little past Memphis. I stopped, and I also went to Graceland, which showed that if you give a hillbilly a whole bunch of money, he's still a hillbilly. And I took 3 days because I stopped everywhere, including every Stuckey's on the way. Because if you don't stop at Stuckey's, you hate America.
Well, I can tell you, like right here, you've got Comic World and Games in East Dubuque. And if you the interesting thing about if you go south, if you want to stay along the Mississippi River, you'll be taking Highway 52, Highway 84 in by that time you're in the Illinois part. But you can also, you get down to the Moline and Davenport. They got a bunch of comic shops and things there.
Oh, yeah. The Quad Cities. So, I know the Quad Cities.
Yeah. So there, you got at least two that you can visit on the way in. So, and then you can give me, and you can even go to Dyersville Comic and Games in Dyersville, and then maybe go see the Field of Dreams if you're so inclined. It might even be cool because the corn will be high as opposed to like when we saw it in the spring and it wasn't. That's a little bit of a detour. But there, now you got four comic shops on the way, and you're not even close to your home. See, that's how I used to do it when I used to go on these traveling for TSA. I would, first thing I'd do is Google and see if there are any comic shops around that I could hit to. And I hit every comics town shop in Manhattan, everyone in Las Vegas. I didn't get a chance to go to Mile High, though, because I had to get redeployed when I was there. Had a trip ready to go. Just didn't happen.
Bastards.
But we were, instead of looking south, ooh, River City Hobbies. No, that doesn't look like a real comic store. But it's in La Crosse, Minnesota, Wisconsin. So there's something you could check out. But we went north. North.
To Alaska. You go north to rush the gold.
Nope, we just went as far as Duluth.
Oh.
Which it's, what do you mean? Oh, you were there, you bobo.
Oh, well, we didn't go there directly.
Oh, hell no. You never go direct.
Last because two trips I went direct.
Because you're an idiot, but we're not.
No, I wasn't in charge.
We aren't, again, you're an idiot. We're not covering that. We're covering our fun. And the one thing we didn't do, I know on the way up, we actually thought about recording things, but we just kind of, I don't know, Corey never turned the recorder on, so no big deal. But on the way up, it was kind of like, do you want to go here? Sure. So we took Scenic 23. Normally when you go north to Duluth, you can just take Highway 35 or Interstate 35. So we took the detour on 23, which was kind of neat. I guess no fall colors, so we're kind of a little down about that. But there's even that little bit of 23 that goes through Wisconsin in order to get to where you're going. And there was a little bar there. I don't think we didn't see it. But the only way to get to that bar is by going through Minnesota via Highway 23, and then you can get to that bar. It was right before we went over the St. Louis River for the first time, too. Was that the
scary bridge?
No, that was once we were over the St. Louis River. Then we got into trying to figure out the town it's in. And it's still part of it. Looks like it's still part of Duluth. Real south. We crossed over Highway 105. That was the scary bridge going over the St. Louis River again. One of these old-fashioned girder bridges where on the top they used to have trains, and the bottom they did it for cars. And this bridge probably has seen better days. They call it the Oliver Bridge.
Which reminded me that when they had Cousin Oliver show up on the Brady Bunch, that's when the show turned to shit.
Yeah. This sucker was constructed in 1916, and it's still chugging away. You know, didn't it have things like trucks must not meet on the bridge?
Yes.
We seemed kind of mean.
Which, you know, how can you plan that?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well.
And from there, of course, it was easy. We just got on the Highway 35, and we went into Superior.
Superior to what?
Everything.
No.
Yep.
No.
Sorry. Well, then don't ask.
It wasn't Superior.
It was
Superior. I want to know what it's superior to, because,
it is.
Boy, it just seemed like a beat-up old town.
Corey. From a guy who comes from a beat-up old town. Well, I suppose you're...
No, Chaska, I'm not talking rocking.
That. I'm talking where you grew up.
Why do you think I left? Good afternoon, everybody.
Place,
thank
did
you.
Did you remember the first place we stopped at?
Didn't we pee in the river or something?
You may have.
No, first place we stopped at was Holiday.
Yep, had to get the road trip donuts. See, Corey with us here. This is why it's hard to do road trips with Corey, because we're in Superior, Wisconsin. Corey, meantime, is still in St. Paul, Minnesota. So
you asked place we stopped.
We're gonna have to wait here for Corey to catch up here. So,
did we stop anywhere else on the way up other than when we had to take a pee?
I left one. I don't know about you taking one.
We went into the woods and I found where the teenagers are throwing their empty beer cans.
Yeah. And I got nailed on the cheek by a mosquito.
Oh, that's good.
With a scab that I'm still picking at to this day.
And Joe has to have his waxy cheap donuts. I stopped at Tim Hortons. And yeah, you say bleh now, but boy, you were chowing on the Timbits.
There are certain rules to road trips that you have to do. And one of them is you have to buy the cheap waxy donuts. Hostess works, but they're usually a cheaper alternative to Hostess. And you have to have one. Doesn't matter.
Freshly.
And if you don't, the road trip doesn't work. That's why your previous road trips to Duluth and beyond sucked. Because you didn't obey the simple have a wax donut. And yes,
in my rules, it's a hard candy.
Then, but it's
that's what my dad taught me.
Well, hard candy could be good, but
root beer barrels and butterscotches.
Not either of those. Your previous trips were bad, but this one started out good because not only did we have the waxy donut, but Corey brought a box of those Tim Horton
Timbits.
Timbits, is that what they call them?
Yes.
Ooh. Yeah, and when you don't eat breakfast, my God.
Pretty much had them all gone.
Damn feeling. Well, we downed about half the box before we got onto the freeway.
Yeah. No, the first place we stopped was Globe News.
Newsstand, yeah. In, let's see, it's 1430 Tower Avenue, Superior, Wisconsin. And as far as I know, they don't have a website. But this is probably the closest thing to an old-time newsstand that still exists. I mean, you got to love it because they had the neon sign on the front.
With a globe.
The handwritten gift shop, cards, comic books.
Magazines.
Yes. And going into it, I don't know how to describe it. It was just your old-fashioned, old-style news. If you couldn't find something you liked in this shop, you're listening to the wrong podcast here, boys.
Well, they had what you would think in a newsstand. You know, they had magazines. They had books. They had comics. They also had vinyl records.
Yep.
Both collectible and not so collectible.
They had toys in the back room, lots of boxes with discounted things. And I got to admit, I did find a few things for my collection. Let's see. I'm trying to find my list here because I done brought me a list.
They also had used books and old magazines from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, which I found fascinating. And not, you know, what you always see. It wasn't a big old stack of National Geographics and Life magazine. No, they had, like, True Detective, True Crime. They actually had some back issues of Confidential, which was a gossip magazine in the 50s that was kind of the first gossip magazine that did not print what the studio heads wanted printed and killed a lot of careers.
I can't even find the bag I had. I know I picked up a couple comic books there. Their comics really could have used a little TLC. I have a feeling they just put stuff in there and forget because there was boxes everywhere. There was no real order. Sort of alphabetical, sort of by title, sort of maybe.
Not a lot of room to move around.
Nope. They were the type of things that were crammed in so heavy that I had to uncram a box just to be able to dig through. But it was fun going through them. I mean, I'd love to. It's the type of place you'd want to go back and just spend more time digging through the back issues because you know no matter what you went through, you're going to miss something. I would say the people working there, I wonder if this is like a family-owned business because they kind of struck me as like a younger, although a young girl up front, a young kid in back. A lot of people in there, though.
Yeah, they were very busy. The girl up front didn't know much of anything.
Well,
she's going to college.
Did you hear the conversation when some old guy come in and it's obvious whatever he wanted and my gist was that he probably wanted like some rolling papers or something. And but he didn't have anything to pay with it. And he was like, "Well, if I give you like his credit card number, if I come back later with his number, and no matter what happened, it was like there was no way this transaction was going to go because this guy had nothing to pay for it. And, you know, I almost felt sorry for her because it's like, wow, you know, she's up front where all the tobacco stuff is, and you're like, this is what she's got to deal with all day long? It's like,
yeah.
Oh, go back, get your wallet, come back.
You need money to buy things.
So that was kind of semi-amusing, but I bought
for us, yes. For her, probably not so much.
Yeah, but I'm not retail anymore, so for me, very. I can't find the books that I bought. What did you end up getting, Corey?
No, you got I got a bunch of Star Trek novels from the 70s, because there were most people, when you think Star Trek novels, you think of the ones that started in the 80s that were done by pocketbooks. They were numbered. That's the series that's still going now. But in the 70s, Bantam Books did a bunch of Star Trek stories. They kind of came out at random. The distribution wasn't all that great. And they were just short novels. Like kind of, you know, they used to have novels based on TV series all the time. You probably remember the Battlestar Galactica novels, or the Adams Family novels, or the Man from U.N.C.L.E. novels. They were kind of like that, except for a few of them. They got some decent science fiction authors. But because they were published by Bantam, Pocket never reprinted them. And these guys had them for a buck each. So here's some early Star Trek novels from the 70s, before Star Trek became, oh my God, Star Trek!
Yeah.
And they're going to be fun to read.
I think I picked up a couple Gru books, like early Gru issues, and a couple other holes. Nothing too significant, because I didn't really get a chance to round out my. I think Mighty Mangor was one of them I picked up, number 4.
One other thing I picked up that you're interested in.
Who are
you? I got the Farmer's Almanac.
Oh, yeah. You're going to read ahead and find out just how our winter is going to be.
Mild and dry. The Farmer's Almanac, there are like 3 or 4 almanacs. But the old Farmer's Almanac is the one that my grandfather always bought. And they're the ones that claim to be a descendant of the Ben Franklin Almanac. And that's the one I always buy. They are also the one that had the little hole in the upper left-hand corner, and the reason was so you can hang it from a nail.
Yeah, and then refer to it.
And my grandfather actually did hang his from the nail. He used it for planting. And I guess they wanted to do away with that hole because it costs a certain amount of money, and people were up in arms, mostly farmers, who said, nope. We hang it on a nail out, you know, here or there, wherever, so that we can, you know, just, we don't have to put it on a shelf. So they still have the hole in the hole, so you can hang it from a nail.
Yeah.
The next stop, Joe?
I think it was called Level Up Games.
Yes.
It looked like a new spot when we went through Superior, my wife and I, earlier this summer. It was one of those places we drove by, and I was like, hey, it's a new comic shop. And Level Up Games, I think, is a chain, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to go to the old Cray 300, because I think they just opened up a new one here in Minnesota.
Well, didn't we go to the one near you?
Yeah. And I don't know if they're related. There's a couple around. There's like one in Eagan, one in South St. Paul, one in Southfield Shopping Center. That's the South St. Paul one. But I don't know if this one is, let's see, where's the one we went to? They got one listed in Whitewater, Wisconsin. No, that's not the one we went to. So maybe they're not affiliated with them. They just, the one we stopped at, Level Up, that was it. Level Up Toys and Comics. 525 Tower Avenue Superior, just a couple blocks north of Global News there, or Global Newsstand. And I got to admit, I was kind of excited going in. It looked new. The storefront was real interesting. It had like, just a wide open area.
And a crock pot in the front window.
And on the second floor, they had tables set up for games.
And what it was kind of like an indoor balcony.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the big open area, and then around the back of the store was this balcony type thing that they had set up. If you're going there for comics, the comics were all beat to hell.
Yeah, they need to get better shelving for their comics. They have them vertical, and they just, the problem was is they're I don't know if they have a strong AC or if they're tied into the bigger building, and you know, it was an older storefront, but the comics were either had that little warp you get from too much humidity, or because they were stored almost up and down, they were just folded over in half. And
yeah.
You see in some places where they flipped the book to try to keep that from happening. My guess
Oh, look, there's
is,
the back of a comic.
My guess is they're probably more game-orientated, judging by the fact there were a couple tables active upstairs, and there's people digging through magic cards, and even just going through their Facebook page, it looks like just lots and lots of people gaming and miniatures. So comics may be a second thing to them. I didn't see any old comics there, which makes
yeah,
me...
Yeah, they had no back issues.
Either... It makes me curious as what how they're getting them, or maybe they're shipping them off, or maybe they're just so new that they didn't get a chance to, you know, build up a back stock.
The other thing I thought was interesting is they're very... They had a lot of DCs on the shelf. Marvel, not that much. They didn't even have, like, the most recent issues of Secret Empire, which, you know, everybody should have because supposedly it didn't sell. But they didn't have much of anything for Marvel. I counted they had less than 10 trade paperbacks. No back issues. And their comics were all just kind of beat to hell.
My guess
and
is
their shelving was their shelving seemed like it was that really old comic shelving that newsstands had back in the 60s and 70s, where there are slots and you just put them into the slots, but the slots only came up to about the third of the cover, so they would just flop over. But gaming wise, you know, their games. They had a section that had a lot of board games, a lot of box games, but it looks like a lot of their money is from people coming in and gaming to the point where, you know, they had a crock pot going, and when I looked at their board, it was like, oh, yeah, they got Dungeons & Dragons starting in about an hour, and
yep.
They sell, you know, sodas and snacks and things like that. And really, you know, if you're going to be a gaming store, that's kind of an easy way to make extra money. Because you could sell somebody the game, but also give them game space and sell the food. Gamer's snack. I know when Dan and I would game, we would, you know, we'd make something to eat, but then, you know, it's snack time, baby.
Yeah, I've been scrolling through their pictures on Facebook, and really, they're a game store. I don't know why you'd want to put comics or toys in the title. They could have some toys. Mostly newer things. But again, for comics, not that impressive.
Yeah. I'm not a gamer that much anymore, so, yeah. Not my kind of store, really. There were some things in there that I thought were kind of cool, and if I was a gamer, you know, they had games that I'm interested in, like Contagion and, Ticket to Ride, and, you know, the European board games that are really hot now. But, you know, you can never go wrong with selling Settlers of Catan.
Negative.
But that was it for Superior.
Yep. And then we crossed the bridge into back home to Minnesota.
And I don't know, Joe. Maybe somebody can explain it to me. It was almost like night and day. Superior was all low buildings, old buildings, not a lot going on. You go into Duluth, Duluth feels like a city. The buildings are tall, they're shiny, they're new. It looks like they have put a lot of money into tourism because we went down by the lakefront, and that's where I had been before. And, you know, they've got that big aquarium, and they've got this. And it was almost like going from, you know, an Eastern Bloc country to West Germany in the 70s. It was like, wow, what happened when we crossed the bridge?
You're not far off. I mean, Duluth has transformed their harbor into kind of a touristy area, more so than Superior, because Superior is still pretty much, that's where all the docks are. So if you're talking who's probably making more money on fees for ships coming in, well, you'd probably have to give the nod to Superior. So they're probably more of a working class type town. And Duluth is probably working more towards the touristy side, because they're kind of really the doorway to the North Shore, where it is definitely all touristy.
Now, is this a new sort of thing? Did Duluth used to be kind of beat down like Superior? Or
has
it
probably
always been like
that? They were hit hard when a lot of the mining collapsed, because, you know, there's huge ore areas, and, you know, later on we actually visited one of them. But there's Burlington has a huge ore docks, as far as I know, in Superior, that they don't even use anymore. The ones in Duluth are active. We went up to Two Harbors. We saw the ones that are active. So mining took a hard turn. I don't think a lot of farming goes up there because they're more southwards, although they might have grain move out through there. There were a lot of big grain elevators along Superior. But, yeah, they've always been kind of economically depressed. And I think Duluth has kind of embraced their waterfront. I mean, I don't know if you walked on it, but they have a Duluth – it's like a two-and-a-half-mile walk for that you can go along Lake Superior there.
Yes, that's what I did the last time I went.
So, yeah, that's all newer stuff. I mean, newer like in the last 10 years or so, maybe more. I remember it used to be the one area we didn't go to by the lift bridge has the Maritime Museum, and you can go out and watch ships come in, and definitely more storefronts. The downtown sort of being revitalized. It was not as many vacant storefronts as there used to be. Certainly, I mean, Pat and I used to go up there constantly. And when we get to the second shop we visited, I'll talk more about where they used to be located, up and down all over Duluth. But the one place we did stop was called Rogue Robot Games and Comics. 3 South 4th Avenue in Duluth, just nestled in the middle of, I mean, you have to know where you're going on this one because you'll miss it quick, but they do have a good sign out. And this is probably the closest that Duluth and Superior area has to a classic comic / game store, where lots of comics, lots of graphic novels, lots of game. They have a big gaming area. And I've been here a number of times. One of my favorite stops. Again, I found a couple books that I you know, just to fill in collections and things like that. Last time I was there, I picked up the hardcover Will Eisner Life in Pictures. What did you think on this one?
This store was a little baffling to me because the front of it seemed really crowded and cramped. But they had good stuff. You know, they had probably the same amount of games as Level Up did in a much smaller space. And the comics were in kind of the second room. And they, again, felt very cramped. There were 2 levels. You know, up on top were back issues, and then underneath, where you had to literally sit on the floor and pull the boxes out to look through those back issues.
Which is what I spend most of the time doing.
And then they had, you know, some bookshelves filled with graphic novels. Their new comic section was a old Schinders rack. I know those racks. An old Schinders rack. And I was able to pick up all of the Kirby True Believers books that I'd been looking for, all 12. They had them right there on the front shelf, as well as Evanier's book and all of the DC Kirby books that I'd ordered from DCB Service. And then in a further back room that was huge, they had tables set up for gaming. And for the life of me, I don't know why, other than the fact that you really can't see into that room, why they haven't merchandised that. Because the shop itself feels really cramped, and then you'd step into that back room, and it's like, oh, wow, this is like, you know, twice as big as the regular shop. And if it were me, I would reconfigure the store a bit. I would put the kind of the front island so you can see in both areas and spread out some of that stuff so that, you know, people aren't having to sit on the floor and wiggle by each other to look through back issues and the like. But the merchandise they had was really good. I like their back issues. Their back issues look like someone pays a lot of attention to them. They have a, if you're a regular customer, they actually have a section for these are the back issues that we just got, which I liked. I always think that's a cool idea. If, you know, you have people who come in all the time, they're not going to look through the back issues after a couple of months because it's like, ah, I looked through them already. But if you've got, oh, here's the stuff that just came in this month, you're going to look there. The high dollar back issues were behind the counter, which again, I think they'd sell better if you had enough room that you could display them rather than having to ask for the box and flip through the box. If I lived in the area, that would be my shop. Although I honestly don't know where they could put their pull boxes because there just wasn't room for anything.
Yeah, they had a few there, but not a lot.
But it was a nice little shop. It looked kind of like a neighborhood shop. And again, the big gaming tables in the back, and they had a whiteboard that had all the gaming set up. The other thing is that the gamers, now this didn't bother me, but it was some younger teenagers, you probably couldn't drive yet. They were playing D&D, and boy, were they cursing. Mom and Dad weren't around, so they could curse like sailors.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, you kind of get the idea that, hey, look, I discovered a new curse word, and you know, a lot of ragging on each other, and you know, even when the ragging went on to different themes, they'd always come back as like one kid they just wanted to keep picking on, and it was Geeksville all over again.
Yeah,
what was the thing Dorkin did? Eckenville.
What was that? The Eltingville.
Yeah.
Eltingville Club.
Every time I have been in these shop, they've been really friendly. And, you know, we were teasing the guy last time because I think it was his mom with him because he was like, oh, I don't remember you coming in last time. I said, well, that's because you were busy talking to my daughter. Even Hollywood said that one. So parking's a little tight. I would definitely remember to bring a few quarters with you. But, you know, there's an actual parking ramp next to it. So for the space they got, they really really pack a lot in there. And I enjoyed being able to go in this time around and spend some time digging through the back issues. I only bought a couple back issues. What'd you end up getting, Corey?
Off the bargain table, I picked up a couple of the Dark Horse archives. I got Alien and Alien vs. Predator. But the main thing was those Kirby True Believers. I had not. Here's the odd thing. All the shops in the Twin Cities sold out of them. DCB Service sold out of them. I was actually looking on eBay for somebody who had all 12 of them, didn't have them. I'd pretty much given up. Then I came into that shop, and it's like, oh, they got them. I wonder if they have them all. Yep, they had them all. At cover
cool.
price, so $12 for that. Very happy about it.
Now, the interesting thing about Duluth is it's built on a hill. So whenever you get to the weather forecast in Duluth, you have to have not only what it is down at the bay, because usually during the summer, Lake Superior keeps it nice and cool, not all the time, and during the winter, it keeps it unbearably cold, and then, of course, up on top of the hill. So you could have sometimes a $10 to $20 degree temperature difference. So with that in mind, we journeyed up the hill to a shop that I've been going to almost as long as I've been collecting comics, at least as long since I've had been able to travel. A place called Collector's Connection in Duluth. Right now they are located up in the mall area, 2220 Mountain Shadow Drive up in Duluth. They have a website, collectorsconnectionduluth.com, and, of course, a Facebook page. When I first went to this shop, Pat and I used to go to a Comic-Con in Duluth, and it was one of the major ones that we went to. So we'd, you know, gather everything up, travel north. And he'd been located downtown area. At first he was on the one side over by the where he had the con, I think, which was a Holiday Inn at one time, not too far from where the previous comic shop was. Then he was down closer to the Lake Avenue, back where Ferris Alexander had one of his porn shops.
Porn!
Because obviously after the con, we'd stop in Collector's Connection, look at stuff, and then hit the smut shop. I was telling Corey there used to be a fire trap type bookstore in a warehouse a couple blocks down that I remember going into, and it was just one of those places stacked floor to ceiling with bookshelves going down every which level. I remember going there looking at the comics and digging through, finding all sorts of old, well, then they were Silver Age gems, and just fantastic place. And, of course, it's not there anymore, probably because the fire marshal shut her down. Collector's Connection moved from downtown up to Miller Hill, where there was a mall. And then from there, they moved to the place I believe they are now. They've been on different ends of the mall. And, of course, something caught my eye as we were walking in, a shop that I didn't notice the last time I was there, maybe because the shopping mall they're in is almost like on, what you'd say, it's like built in a, on a, not straight, but it was like a curve. So you walk into Collector's Connection, you may not be able to notice the stores off to the immediate right or the immediate left. Well, I noticed two words, Toy Galaxy. And so I had to jump in this place. And they're located right next door at 2218 Mountain Shadow Drive. And when I went in here, it was like walking into an old museum, like a toy museum, but you can buy everything. Vintage toys, they had some cereal boxes that were a lot of fun. I was looking at things that I used to sell. Unfortunately, I wasn't ready to buy toys. I didn't buy anything there, but I did go next door afterwards. I told Corey, you got to get over here when we're done here. Collector's Connection also had, what was it? Did they say Disco Round?
Disco Round, which was a chain of used CD stores here in the Twin Cities. At one point, I remember there were like 15 or 16 of them.
Yeah.
And then they slowly went away as people discovered the internet. Oh,
yeah,
Napster.
If they just bought, decided to move to this storefront and take it over, you know, because it's, you know, there's, it was half DVDs and CDs.
No, it wasn't even half. It might have been like a quarter. And
well, there was a quarter there, but it was actually one half of the store.
Yeah, at one time.
The other half. That's why I'm wondering, maybe they just like took the wall out and said, yeah, we'll take this over.
And the thing that was weird is the CDs, they had like a wall rack, one, and it was, they're all a buck. And DVDs, they had a few, and they were all $3. Blu-rays were $5.
Yeah, so they're probably blowing them out anyways.
Yeah, it was very clear that's, you know, it was very clear looking at them that they quit buying used movies about 2 years ago, and they're just getting rid of what they got.
I ended up, this time around, you know, again, I looked through stuff, but I did pick up a run of Strike Force, how do you say it?
Morituri.
And this is
trade paperbacks.
Yeah, trade paperbacks that have the entire series in it, not the Electric Bugaloo.
Yeah, I was going to say, later. Except for the conclusion. I don't
so
know if
I've
they put that out as a trade. Let me look.
I've got those. I've got the comics. And basically, they're not comics that have a value, so they will probably be put into my aforementioned dollar bins that I'll be taking to Fall Comic Con later. Which, while Corey looks, I will just mention, is October 7th. And, of course, if you go to MCBAComicCons.com, you can not only buy advance tickets, see the guests that are coming, like Pat Broderick, Pete Krause, good friends going there as well. And then, of course, you can see my little logo there because they used our unofficial, official, crazy podcast logo.
Joe, Volume 3 does have the five-part miniseries that ended it, the Strike Force Moratori Electric Undertow. Here's a weird thing about it. James Hudnell took over writing with issue 21. He wrote 21 through 31, and then the concluding miniseries. And if you are friends with him on the Facebooks, he will tell you he created it, even though Peter Gillis is the creator and the guy who wrote issues 1 through 20. But that's neither here nor there.
Not here nor there. Well, that's good, because now that's five more issues out of my collection I can get rid of.
There you go.
And I'll replace them with this here paperback. And someday in the future, or it could be next week, it depends on how I read things, I will let you know about this. This is one of those collections that I've been working forever to try to fill the holes. I know I bought them. I don't know why I'm missing a few issues. And I believe a while back I was able to finish collecting them and then fill the holes. So that's what I ended up getting. Did you pick up anything from Collector Connection?
They had a setup of the Marvel hardcovers that Marvel was dumping on the market a couple of years ago. So I looked through those, and it's the same that as every place else, except they had a paperback version of the first Human Torch masterwork. No, not the one from the 60s that Jack Kirby drew. Nope, the one from the 40s. So that's one of the masterworks that was on my need-to-find-it list. Well, I don't need to find it now.
Cool.
So it's the first four issues of the Human Torch, because back in the Golden Age, comics were 68 pages and no ads, other than some house ads. So it's the earliest Human Torch stories, some really early Submariner stories, and then, you know, some other Marvel Golden Age characters you've never heard of. I'm talking about you, Rockman!
Oh, he's picking on the Rockman.
Who came from under the earth and his skin as strong as a rock. And then they were also blowing out some hardcover books. And I picked up a Beatles hardcover that I've been hearing about but never bought. And then a Warren Zevon biography written by his first wife. But as I look through it, it's not really a biography so much as she sat down and interviewed people. And, okay, tell me about when Warren was a child. And she's got, like, excerpts from the interviews. So that'll be an interesting read. I really wanted to buy some DVDs. They didn't have any. This is you said that Globe News was like a classic place. To me, this is like your 90s comic shop. Collector's Collection was your 90s comic shop. Really nice setup for their new books. It was clear they were taking care of them. Not much in the way of trade paperbacks. You know, they had some, but I wouldn't call it a... basically, it's okay, here's the stuff that sells, and they were missing some Walking Dead, they were missing some of the other, you know, big series, but stuff like Sandman, oh, they didn't have any Sandman. Pretty mainstream in what they had. And the back issues were interesting. The thing I really liked was a guy came in, and he was bringing in a Silver Age Marvel collection. So they were haggling over that Silver Age Marvel collection the whole time we were there.
Yeah, it would have been nice to see what ended up happening with that. I was trying to get Aaron's attention to say hi, but he was too busy working that guy. It was hard to say, too, because it was you listening to the guy who brought the collection, and it sounded like more he was bitching about his employees. And I couldn't quite swing, is this a guy who has a store, had a store, or what the deal was, because he never really mentioned, you know, was it a comic shop? Was it something else? So, and of course, the conversation was just loud enough so you could hear it throughout the store, but there wasn't enough information, and I didn't feel like butting in there. So mainly, I wanted to get Corey over to Toy Galaxy and get your impression of that shop.
First off, it's nostalgia. You walk in, it's nostalgia.
Oh.
They've got Atari. And a bunch of Atari
games.
And the thing about the Atari
games
is they're dirt cheap. We've got a used game store here that has Atari and everything. And the guy here, because I'm smart enough, I know, you know, if I want an Atari games, they've got them on disc. So, all right, here's 100 of the Atari games for your Xbox One. and you'll play them for like 20 minutes and go, ugh, this sucks. But people will buy an Atari, and then they'll bring it back in like a day or two and say, yeah, I'm bored. Yeah, the games were terrible. But they had that. They had an Intellivision. They didn't have a ColecoVision, which usually places like that, if they've got the old game systems, they've got a ColecoVision. They had, you know, the first Nintendo, Super Nintendo, all that. They had a bunch of the old handheld games, including some that I did not remember at all.
And of course, what this whole thing is telling you, that Corey is a big-time gaming geek, because I didn't notice any of that. I noticed all the toys he had, and just the different vintage toys, the Star Wars, the He-Man, some of the a few boxes of comics, nothing too major.
Mostly magazines. They were mostly magazines, and it was like Famous Monsters of Filmland, Heavy Metal, Mad, some Cracked, Savage Sword of Conan. The Mad were not bagged or priced, and I decided not to chance it because usually, you know, places like that, if stuff's not priced and you bring it up, you go, oh, yeah, you want that one? That's $35.
Now, I'm curious about this because we talked with the guy a little bit, mostly about the cereal boxes that he had up and around.
For me, that's pure nostalgia because it's like, oh, yeah, Super Orange Crisp. Oh, I love
like
those.
The Pink Panther and
Nerds.
Oh, and I'm curious because there used to be a guy who had a store called Toy Galaxy down in Twin Cities back when Hot Comics was around. And what I used to love talking with this guy is he'd come in and his store, he had a wall of vintage Star Wars. Just beautiful. Basically, the gist he told me is that at the time, Starlog had a shop at the Mall of America. And what they didn't buy, they would send the guy over to this guy. And what he loved is that he could buy toys and go out to California and sell them for probably double what he bought them in the Midwest. Because Midwest always had been a depressed price area. Even growing up, people would come up from Chicago, hit all the comic shops, buy things at regular price, go to Chicago and sell them. Which is why you never really saw great runs of Silver Age, Golden Age in the Twin Cities, because they all migrated out to the coast. Just some mental thing about here, you know. But
there was one other thing that happened, though, with a lot of the Golden Age, and I don't know if you remember it at all, but it was when you had your shop. There was, in the mid-90s, I don't know if it was like 93 or 94, all of the comic shops in the area, except yours, got hit.
Well, that was actually before... That was before I bought the shop, and Brian did get hit.
Because they went in, and they just grabbed all the Golden and Silver Age stuff. They didn't grab money. They didn't grab this. Nope, they just went in. If you had Golden and Silver Age books, you got hit. Schindler's didn't get hit because they had spent a lot of money on security equipment because of the...
Oh, yeah.
Well, the should I tell the story, Joe?
Might as well. You're halfway there.
Back in 1986, when Ed Meese, who was the Reagan's attorney general, decided to crack down on porn, he commissioned a study to try and show that porn was the biggest problem in America. And actually, the study came back and said, "Nah, porn doesn't cause problems." But he threw that study out and basically went to every state and said to the attorney generals that have been appointed, "You need to pick out somebody who's going to take the fall for porn." And in Minnesota, it was Ferris Alexander. But before that, they had whipped people up into a frenzy to where there were people protesting the porn at Schindler's, and then at the downtown Schindler's, someone walked into the porn section, sat down, poured gasoline on themselves, and lit themselves on fire as a protest.
I did not hear about that.
And the next day, Schindler's put in security and cameras and all this other stuff because they didn't want anything like that ever happening again. I remember when I first started at Schindler's, you know, fax machines were kind of new. Every few days we get a bulletin, there are rumors that there will be a protest at the blah, blah, blah store. Be prepared and here's what you need to do. And if protesters do show up, call the police, call this number, tell them this. So that stuff never really materialized when I worked there, because by 88, 89, you know, well, Barris Alexander's arrested, and Bush's people went, hooray, we've stopped the porn industry.
Yeah, they closed the shop I mentioned in Duluth. They closed the one on Dale and University, which is interesting because across the place was the Faust Theater. If you ever read Omaha the Cat Dancer, they talk about how ridiculous it is where the customers, the patrons were on one side. There was a glass wall, and on the other side, the dancers were. They did that because the city council passed a law saying you could not serve alcohol where new dancers were at the same address or some legal thing. And so what they did is they actually tore the wall down, put a glass wall up, so the dancers were in one physical address and the patrons were at the second address. And basically the owners of the Foss came up with that. If you close Alexander, we'll sell out to you, when they thought it would never happen. Well, it did, and they, of course, sued, and the court said, hey, you signed the agreement, dumbass. So they basically bought it, tore it down. It's a community library now. And, of course, the coda on this is that apparently all the smut that Ferris had ended up being bought by Schinders.
Yeah, somehow it just kind of showed up at Schinders.
And later on it became a thing like, well, you know, Schinders will always carry the porn because the Supreme Court said you have to allow it in the community. You know, you can say, yeah, we don't want it X amount of feet from a school or whatever. But I guess Schinders was buddy with Mark Dayton, who at the time was a general or an attorney and is also now our governor.
He was the attorney general at the time, by the way.
Yeah, so they were kind of good buds. So it was kind of maybe a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We'll let you be. And, you know, because they were, you know, it always drove me crazy when I had my shop because, oh, Schindler's was such a great place. I said, well, you ever walk through the wooden door and back? Why? That's where they hide the porn. There's no porn there. I said, then you need to go look through a fucking wooden door, baby. Even Jay Leno, and I've told this story before, where they were moving Cheers reruns back and moving Tonight Show up, so he got an interview with the local news, and he goes, hey, how's Schindler's there? Great place to buy porn, huh? As he's winking at the camera. The one thing I want to go back to talking about the Golden Age, something about the Twin Cities market, and it's just it's a Midwest mentality. You know, you look at you run into it today. You know, people go, they look at something, oh, well, you know, you got it priced at $100. The guide says it's 90. I won't go over 90 because they treat the guide like it's a Bible.
Yes.
And even if it's an overstatement, what I was told by John Nunziata, who used to own St. Paul Comic, said the problem with the guide is he's telling you what it's sold for.
Last year.
That has no bearing on what it's going for now. So, it's a guide. It's not a Bible. He said, but that's something in the Twin Cities. He said, if he wants to sell a book, he always prices it just a little below guide because, he said, most of the collectors were so mental, they'd flip that guide open. $20. He's got an 18. Below guide. I'll buy it. He said, that's just how it works. John was notorious when he first started his comics. He went to every single store in town. And maybe Joel Thingball can tell us the stores that were on. Bought every piece of decent Silver Age, I'm sorry, decent Golden Age you could buy. And everybody thought he was an idiot, laughing his ass off. Well, then the Golden Age comics started to explode in terms of price. And, of course, now you have a book that tells you what it's worth, and that fueled it as well. Nobody was laughing then.
Nope.
And nobody hit John's store because every night he took all of his expensive books and put it in a gigantic 2-ton safe. And he's like, if anybody can move that safe, they can have the books. Nick loved Twin City St. Paul Comic, and he said that Hot Comics, when I ran it, was the same way because it'd be like you'd be flipping through books at price. Hey, look at this, a beat up copy of Amazing Fantasy 15. Oh, here's a mint Uncle Scrooge number one. You know, whatever. You know, he just pile things and no rhyme or reason to it. And he said Hot Comics was that way when I was running it. There's a Capital City Comics that I ran into when Dana went to college. in Madison briefly. Same way, just books piled. Yeah, as if the guy just doesn't have time to price them on. If he does, he'll just look them up in the guide, like you said earlier. There's a couple of weird things about the Twin Cities and about where have all the Golden Age gone. Where are we going to eat? And of course,
well, yeah, we hadn't eaten anything but Timbits since we woke up.
There's only one place to go. We went up the North Shore to Betty's Pies. Betty's Pies. And of course, not only did we have a decent dinner, we had pie, and Corey, of course, brought some pie home.
Yes, I bought an entire maple pie.
Pie, and I brought pie home for my wife and a giant cinnamon roll for my daughter.
Just a slice.
And of course,
of pie.
By the time we were done with that,
love pie as much as me.
Oh, well, no. See, you obsess it. I enjoy it. It's a big difference.
Both.
Big difference. Tremendous difference.
I had a tremendous pie. I still have
Betty's.
I still have a quarter of
Betty's
it.
Pies is 1633 Minnesota Highway 61. A little bit north of Two Harbors. And if you Google it, you can find it. They got a Facebook. Definitely worth a stop, whether you're going up the North Shore or coming back, or you're just in Duluth like we did, and we went north. And then, of course, when we were done, we went down to the harbor. And I got – had you ever been to that harbor before?
No.
In Two Harbors?
The only place I'd been was the Lake Walk. Both the people I went to Duluth with, that's the only place they wanted to go. Matter of fact, one of them, we went up, we did the Lake Walk, we came home. That's all she wanted to do. And I
Which
was
I
like,
find
oh,
funny.
Shouldn't we, couldn't we, why don't we, nope, this is all they wanted to do.
Which I actually find kind of amusing because as a lifelong Minnesotan, I have never done the Lake Walk. I've been there a couple times. I've been at the one end where the lift bridge is. I've been on the other end where there was a hotel, and Chris and I were going to do it, but the weekend we were up there, it was just rainy and crappy.
Oh, so it's okay for you not to go out and walk when it's rainy and crappy, but if I don't go and walk around when it's rainy and crappy,
the difference
I'm an asshole.
The difference is you never went. You stayed at home high and dry in the Strode compound. I went knowing it was going to be rainy. Matter of fact,
had somebody to go there with.
We went, yeah, there is that. We went.
Had somebody to play Twister with.
It did kind of sprinkle while we were on the way up.
Maybe even spin the bottle. Did you guys play spin the bottle?
What did you think about, you don't please spin the bottle after being married for 28 years?
Well, that's your problem.
But no, we recycle our bottles like good citizens should.
After you spin them.
What did you think of the harbor?
I thought it was nice. I really wanted to go there sometime and just spend an afternoon.
It is an afternoon place. There, you know, I mean, we could have, my fault, I didn't bring a coat with me thinking, oh, it'll be warm. It wasn't. But you could, again, that was the temperature by the lake. You could walk out the walk. They got, if you're there early enough, you can go into the gift store that there was a red lighthouse, Two Harbors Lighthouse. It's a bed and breakfast there. They actually had an ore boat there that was loading up. There's a Duluth train museum, because I like trains, and you can either take the train part of the way up or catch it at Two Harbors, go part way down, or catch a train and go the entire distance between it. And there's a museum there.
He's
there's a number of
the
other
distance.
Shops. Go the distance.
He's going for speed.
So we actually, there were quite a few places that we could have gone, but by that time it was getting dark. We hit the rest area at the top of the hill.
It was dark. Cold.
By that time, well, it was so foggy, it looked like Crisis on Infinite Earth was chasing us out of Duluth. And we were bloated with pie, so we went home. One little trip, but we'll have to go up there some other time when we can go and just enjoy some of the other things. There's some bookstores, there's some secondhand stores, there's a number of flea markets that would just be a blast. And as per usual, and this will be kind of a mini freaking, which I won't get into, every time I come home from the North Shore, I get a little depressed because I am here and not there.
I was okay. I was okay with visiting.
I want to move there. But, and, you know, we as we traveled through, we saw tons of areas that were closed, you know, little shops that had closed, and we're like, what could we possibly do to make that work?
Not we.
But you meaning me, because, I mean, that's the way I roll.
And after we do that, I have to fill you in on what's going on here at the podcast. Last week was a new episode of Bad Advice. Next week will be another new episode of Bad Advice.
Because you people are not listening to the Bad Advice. There will be more.
Well, just send us a letter and we will give you bad advice. You having problems in your love life? Having problems in your work life? Having problems with your bunny? Having problems with the cats that live under your house?
Yeah.
Just send us a letter. This Friday or Saturday, depending, is a new episode of Novelcast, part nine of Do the Job, a mystery set in the world of 80s professional wrestling, where I take my novels and turn them into free audio podcasts. And we've also got a new episode of Solitaire Rose Radio. I'm interviewing an Iraq war vet who's doing a comic book, and is as we were talking, his Kickstarter was fully funded. Before he'd even made the announcement, his Kickstarter was fully funded because he was going to announce it the day that we did the interview, and he actually told people about it at a convention he went to. And,
hey, you know what?
It was fully funded at that convention. So he's got a really interesting story, and that'll be up later this week.
There are five of those bad wax donuts left.
You can have them.
You know, I was going to say, they don't rot. They just sit there.
Yeah, I
know what I'll be doing after the podcast.
I try not to eat food that doesn't rot. And after we talk about all the wonderful things on the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we ask Joe, what's going on the eBays?
Real hemp.
I'm no selling, by the way.
That's because you have no idea what real hemp is.
Is it connected to... It could be one of two things. It could be connected with Hepcats by, I forget the guy's name, or it could be an R. Crumb comic.
Negative.
Ah, what is it?
From off the streets of Minneapolis comes Real Hep Comics from Slave Labor Graphics. These were three comics around 1983. You would almost call them, they're a little bit better published than mini comics, as they had a hardcover. Kind of like a cardboard cover, I should say. A lot of local artists.
Now, was this Slave Labor connected to Slave Labor Graphics?
Or not? I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Steel Dragon.
Oh, Steel Dragon, I know. Yeah, that was
Will
Shetterly's company.
Yep. Matt Friesel, Rich Larson, Reed Waller were in it. I had one of my favorite cartoons ever, which I wish I would have just copied down, where it's a bunch of big buildings are playing cards on top of the Metrodome, and when the Fauché Tower gets up and goes, I'll be back in a minute. Crunch, crunch, as he's panicking cars and people. Ah, this is a good spot. Name of the story? Where shopping malls come from. There were three issues. They are like crazy, insane, valuable trying to find them because of the early artwork and the fact that really, unless you were in Minneapolis, you probably never saw them.
Or heard
and
of them.
I had a set of three and ended up selling it on the eBays.
Oh.
So wanted it. It's done, gone.
Gone.
Things will be disappearing over the next couple weeks because what's happening is not only are things selling, for example, the last three things I sold you probably remember this one, Corey, the Superheroes Puzzle and Games, a General Mill giveaway from 1979 that Marvel Dunn did.
They had a magazine, by the way, too, that came out.
Yeah, this is almost a precursor of that. It's probably what gave them the idea to actually have the mag. Detective Comics 444, one of the 100-pagers from DC, but way back from 74, 75. And Samurai Jack Special from 2002, DC Comics. So you had your chance, but like I said, if you go to Crazy KRYZ, a lot of the stuff I'm either going to get rid of and throw in the dollar bin at the Fall Comic Con. And as Corey saw, I've got, 30 boxes ready to rock?
Yeah. You got a con stock there, buddy.
These are just stuff that, for whatever reason, I don't want. And the collection I mentioned earlier, the Strike Force
Moratura,
that'll probably go in there because I just don't care. And I've got some things that have been on the eBays forever. And, of course, I always make the offer to you good listeners. If you ever see something you want, just send me a note, make an offer, say, hey, listen to podcasts. It's nice, you know, $1,000 sign by Harlan Ellison and Richard Corbin, boy, or was it the Boy and His Dog? Hardcover, limited, ultra rare. Yeah, I'll give you $200 for it. Oh, by the way, I listened to the show. Hey, you may be an owner of that if that's the way you roll. Plus, I like to include, I may have to stop saying that because if I get rid of all my dollar books, that's my chief source of crap to throw in as a bonus. Or will I have more? Check it out, KRAYZ, and don't think I don't appreciate it.
Well, and now that we're done with the plugs, we get to my favorite part of the show. No, one, not where I sing Dead Kennedys' Let's Lynch the Landlord.
Oh, that could be fun.
It's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
I already told you my freaking. I get depressed when I come from the North Shore because I really want to live up there. You know, and it's just one of those places I just either inland where Ely is, where, you know, my grandparents had cabin that I go to, or just even along the North Shore. The problem is the taxes are going up so much. I don't think someone on a limited income, aka a pension, could afford to live there. Just a dream. You know, I mean, I got the interwebs, I got the eBays, I could just load all my stuff in there and just sit there and finish out my years selling stuff on eBay, catching up with my friends once a week on my podcast. That's the life for me.
Speaking of
dreaming. Said I'm in the cities.
Speaking of dreaming, one of the things I'm freaking on is that I slept at home all last week. Joe asked me why I'm freaking about that.
Why are you freaking about that?
Well, when I sleep at the group home, my alarm goes off at 5:45, yes. And I pop up immediately because I know that my alarm is not just to wake me up, but it also lets the clients know that, hey, Corey's
up. You can get up now.
We can come out of our room now and start bothering him for things. At home, when the alarm goes off, it's, I can snooze. Yeah, I can snooze. 7:15, oh my God, I only have 15 minutes to get ready and shower and get out the door. So you wake up and you just don't want to leave your bed, whereas, you know, when I sleep at the group home, I want to get up. I want to get off that couch because at least two clients are going to be coming out going, can we turn on the TV? Can you do this? Can we get that? I peed on the floor.
I missed. How do you pee on the floor and miss?
No, they pee on the floor in their room.
Ah.
So they miss by a long shot. So the other non-comic thing that I'm freaking on. Joe, when I got home, you know what I wanted to do Saturday night?
Clean yourself.
No, I just wanted to sit down and watch me some TV.
Mm.
So I have a DVR that's also my cable receiver, so I sit down and I turn it on, and it starts saying horrible, mean things to me. It says, sorry, you don't have that channel. You don't have a DVR. You all this stuff you recorded, it's not there. And I get on the internet chat with the nice people at the cable company, and they do what they can, and they go, nope, your DVR has failed. It died.
It has failed you for the last time.
So two seasons of Fargo, gone. All the remember a couple of years ago when they did Breakfast with the Doctor on BBC America, and they ran the old Tom Baker Doctor Who's that have been cut into like 2 to 3 hour movies. They're gone. All of it gone.
Now, folks, this is what I keep saying for all you people who are like, I like Netflix. I don't need to buy DVDs anymore. When that sunspot hits and wipes out everything online, including this here podcast, you will be suffering and freaking just like Mr. Strode. What's the moral of the story? Collect everything, sell nothing.
So, Sunday, I woke up, I got cleaned up, had to go to the cable store, turn in my old DVRs to get the new one, and yes, the new fancy shiny DVR, everything's stored in the cloud so I can watch it wherever I want. And it's got like a 1 terabyte hard of space that I can fill, and yeah, but But all that stuff is gone. And the bad thing about it is some of it, like a lot of the New Japan stuff, I'm not going to pay $10.99 to sign up for New Japan. So I guess, you know, quite a few months of New Japan's gone. Quite a few months of Ring of Honor's gone. The other stuff, you know, it's out there. I can find it. But, yeah. Comic-wise, I'm freaking on. Joe, you know that all the Carlton stuff is public domain now, right?
I did not.
Yeah, when Carlton went under, one of the things they did, they actually told people, hey, you know, if you want to buy this stuff, pony on up. And DC bought the Carlton heroes, like Blue Beetle and Captain Atom and all that. And what's his name? John Lustig bought all the romance stuff so that he can do Last Kiss. Although I don't see a lot of Last Kiss anymore, so maybe, yeah, he did that for a good 10, 15, 20 years. But the rest of it, like all the horror books and all that, that went public domain. And Craig Yeo is reprinting some of the stuff by artists. You know, he's reprinting the Ditko Carlton stuff and the Tom Sutton Carlton stuff. But some of it just, nope, it's public domain, no one cares. So people have been scanning some of it, and what I did not know is, well, out of your mad knockoffs, Joe, name the mad knockoffs you know of.
Crazy, Cracked. I can't. There was a magazine in the 50s. I can't remember.
Do you remember Sick magazine?
I do not.
Sick was the magazine started in the late 50s that Joe Simon, it was his mad knockoff. And it actually lasted until 81. But from 1975 to 1981, it was published by Carlton. So a lot of those are being scanned and put up online at the site. Said, hey, this stuff's public domain. You can read it. Joe, ask me, Corey, should I go read the Sick magazine?
You know, I try not to answer questions that are so painfully obvious that they get boring when you ask them.
Sick was for people who thought Cracked was just a little too funny
lame
for them.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm reading it. First off, the art is like high school level art. It's like somebody drew it during high school during one of their classes. Oh, it's bad. And the jokes are wretched. There's a Star Trek parody that, you know, I did a funnier Star Trek parody when I was a freshman in high school, Joe. It's bad. It's just fucking bad. And I can't believe it got printed. And now I know why I never saw it. Because it was terrible. And the last thing I'm freaking on, there are rumors abounding that the new Archie line is starting to run into some trouble. I know Josie and the Pussycats was canceled. I've heard that.
Aww.
I've also heard that the Jughead book has been canceled, but I couldn't get confirmation.
Sounds anyway. About right. That's the one I really like.
So it looks like the new Archie line running into some sales trouble, which is a shame because I really like the new Archie line.
I do, too.
Really,
I just wonder if they're running into the same problem that our good buddies at Malibu and Dark Horse and all these other guys do. There are – how many different universes of Archie are there? Afterlife, Classic, the comic book line, Riverdale's its own.
Jughead the Hunger is a separate line.
It is. Isn't Sabrina, her horror book is a separate line?
Yep.
And then you've got – you know, you're reprinting the classic stuff as well as trying to do the new stuff. And then you got all these one-shots coming up, Sharknado, We Met Kiss, we did Fought the Predator, where, you know, people are dying, people are killing. It's other than it's not my Archie, it's too confusing. I don't care about Riverdale because I don't care about the TV show. If you do, good for you. Again, that's why I said I don't care. I don't follow multiple universes well. Maybe you should have, what was it, Life with Archie? That was two universes within its own universe. But you had the Dixon character. Wait, am I saying it right? Dalton? Dixon?
Yeah, Dalton.
Yeah. Well, they kind of inferred that he was traveling between universes. Maybe that could have been your link. Maybe they're setting up for Crisis in the Archie universe. Maybe they'll reset everything at number one, and then we'll have a rebirth, and then we'll have another one, and then I'm out of here!
And the other thing is that, you know, Betty and Veronica, boy, you know, I love the fact that you went to Adam Hughes and said, hey, Adam Hughes, do a book. But then you forgot. It's Adam Hughes.
Do it in this century.
And Adam Hughes is slower.
I mean, it's good when you get it, but...
Adam Hughes is slower than Neil Adams doing Ms. Mystic.
Maybe, yeah, you should have just gone for, you know, when you're done with five issues, do it.
Or, you know, he
All-Star
does
Star Wonder Woman
special issues.
Yes.
He does one-shots, not a continued story. Okay, we both freaked out enough. Joe, what are you geeking on?
I saw a movie, finally.
What?
I know, it's called I Like Trains, so I watch Runaway Train from 1985.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, it's one, I watched it with Chris, my beloved. Unfortunately, I don't think she was quite in the mood for it because there were several scenes in it. Well, first of all, it's basically two escaped convicts and a female railroad worker are stuck on a runaway train as it barrels through Alaska being chased down by a Nazi warden. And I remember watching this probably on late afternoon just because it was a train. And the part I got to was when the train smashed into the caboose, and I was like, oh, you got me. I was able to score a cheap copy of the DVD. And we watched it. The problem was there was a couple scenes where when John Voight was overacting, and my wife just lost it, and she was laughing. And I'm like, you know, I don't think you're taking the right tone to this movie here. You know, it's not a comedy.
Was to her.
Well, apparently, but it's really kind of like, you know, you're really throwing the mood here. But, again, it might just be because she, you know, she's watching because I wanted to watch it, and it has trains, and, you know, every time there was a train, I was, you know, training. I did notice, though, did you notice Tiny Lister in it?
Joe, I saw it when it came out, so... Tiny
no
Lister
excuses.
Wasn't anybody in 85.
No, he wasn't, but it was kind of fun to notice him now because he was the guard that, you know, when they were sneaking out of the prison, yeah, Eric Roberts was kind of, you know, distracting him. Man, check out this. And you're looking at white naked people on magazines and stuff. Did you notice Dennis Franz as the cop?
No.
That was a stretch for him too. I don't buy him as a cop. He should be someone else. There was a couple other character actors, you know, like, hey, I know that actor, and you know, so we had fun looking it up. But I enjoyed the movie, and well, obviously, I bought it, so now I got another train movie. Okay, sit back, Corey. This one's going to take a bit. I'm going to talk fast, and if you can't listen to it, well, that's the beauty of podcast. Here's a stack of books going into the $1 bins that I read. I read the Superman Batman Annual, a reimaginary story where they were talking about apparently Deathstroke is out to kill Bruce Wayne, and this is kind of retelling the first meeting of Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent, and they discover each other's identity.
Oh, yeah. I remember that story.
Yeah, not bad. In the I don't know what the hell was going on, I picked up Avenging Angel, which was a crossover in 98 between Resurrection Man and Supergirl. And it was being written by Peter David. If you're not reading the series, don't bother picking up the three-parter. Dollar bin. I did read when Kevin Smith rebooted the Bionic Man, because I'm a big Bionic Man fan, they, of course, had to come in and visit Bigfoot. And they did a four-parter, Bionic Man 12 through 15. That was a good read. I mean, it's a different continuity, but it was fun. I had a pile of Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man. These all, let's see, this was when, let's not put credits on the front page. Let's see, who's writing these? Zeb Wells, Jim Manfood was doing it, 2002. Two-issue series where Spider-Man kind of went into one of those MTV Beach House scenarios to try to figure out why people were disappearing. And it's on the beach, so who do you think the villain is?
Sandman!
Very good. It was fun because it was a very stylish art and very humorous. And, you know, it's one of those goofy continuity things you could bring back and say, hey, Spider-Man, remember when you were in the beach house? They had the be-all and end-all fight with Norm Osborn, where Norm actually started going after everybody. And let's see, I think Harold Ramos was doing the art. I'm sorry, Harold.
Humberto
Ramos.
Harold Ramos.
It was an interesting run. That one was from 45 to 47. Issue 50 had a one-shot Jenkins wrote where this must have been about the time that in the main book Peter Parker revealed that he was Spider-Man to Mary Jane, because it was kind of interesting watching how she was dealing with it. Reborn Part 1 and 2 was Sam Keith art with, again, Zeb Wells and... again, it tied into the Sandman things. And it was, real stylish because of Sam Keith's artwork. And, of course, if you see a female Sandman, he knows how to draw that. I jumped over to Nova during the Secret Invasion, 16 to 19, which was a lot of fun. A couple odd one-shots. Ron Frontier's Tales of the Macabre, which was actually a pretty good one-shot. Published by Redbud Studios, kind of a World War II type mystery with a twist I didn't expect. I picked up somewhere Supermarket Number 1 from Image. Brian Wood and Kristen doing the art. Enough of a story here to make me want to go find the rest of the series. There was a series, Detectives, where Zatanna was in it with Batman, and they kind of hint that these two had a relationship before. And, of course, this was all pre-New 52, so it didn't matter. But the art was nice and the story was fun. Detective 833, 834, revisited 843 and 844. Corey, did you ever read Brian Boland's The Actress and the Bishop?
Yes.
Oh, God, is that hilarious. Just, I've had this for the longest time. I've never read it. I finally did. Worth reading there. Couple what ifs. What if Civil War, where they, what if they had talked about it instead of fought about it? And then there was Spider-Man Wolverine, where they take the Spider-Man Wolverine one shot and kind of go forward to that. What if Spider-Man actually stayed on the dark side? And of course, the Annihilation one shot. This is back when they didn't really have the Watcher. But the Watcher was in some of them, but they were kind of just doing standalone one shots. Nightwing Annual Number 2. I believe this comes after Infinity Crisis. Till Death Do Us Part, which kind of covers the history between Robin and Batgirl, that is Dick Grayson.
Yes, that was at the end, right before Infinite Crisis, he proposed to her.
Yep.
And then after Infinite Crisis, we got the 6 month or a year jump, and that's what 52 takes place during, but that tells the story of why they didn't get married.
And what happens is they kind of leave it that they might at the end of the annual. This is, if you remember, I just finished reading Infinite Crisis, and of course it was Dick, Bruce, and who's the Robin at the time?
Tim Drake.
Yeah. They go off into the to have a trip to get along, and of course this has the scene that's kind of teased about in online. Like, did you really do that? Where a young Robin and a young Batgirl are locked in a box by Crazy Quilt, and he kind of, wow, you smell nice, and she goes, that better be your utility belt pushing against my leg. What are you talking about? And then of course when they come out, Batman's like, are you all right, Robin? Oh, nothing, as he's pulling the cape over himself. He popped a Woody! There was a Thor one-shot by Alan Davis, Mark Fulmer, The Truth of History, which was entertaining. I just picked it up. It was a one-shot. There's a Madman in My Mirror by James Kitchen. This one is actually more of a prose book, but it deals with a guy who... inadvertently finds Hitler's diary. I picked this up out of a $1 bin, and so you shall return. And the last thing I read, I finally got together a crossover. It was towards a run the end of a run of the Mighty Thor and Journey into Mystery called Everything Burns. And it was kind of a it's one of those books that you had to have been reading the what was going on before, because there's a lot of things in here that I don't remember and that I vaguely remember. Loki was a kid. Odin, this must have been after Fear itself, because Odin was off in, he had locked himself in Asgard. There were three women running Asgardia. Surtur was trying to come back. So it's a good story, but if, again, like most stories with Marvel, if you don't know what happened beforehand, you might be scratching your heads at some of it. This sucker goes through, like, the Mighty Thor 18 through 21, and then they also had done Journey into Mystery, where they were dealing, I think, mostly with the young Loki. 642 to 644, 8-part series. Yeah, whatever, it was okay. Out of all these, the ones that really look up, I would say Actress and the Bishop, if you've never seen it before, is a lot of fun. The rest of it's just, you know, standard comic stuff. Not really collectible, all going into the dollar bin. I mentioned earlier I reread Infinity Crisis. I'm not sure if that holds up good or not. Because it's just, and I also read Legends, the one that, let's see, Len Wein, John Byrne. Oh, I don't have the book here. It's more interesting reading the story about how it got together in the front of the paperback than it was actually reading the story, for a reason I'll get to in a second. But this occurred after Crisis on Infinite Earths, and this was their chance to reboot the Legends. And they talk about, it's basically Darkseid and Phantom Stranger watching as Darkseid's trying to destroy the myth of heroes, of Legends. And, of course, it doesn't work. But it comes to the conclusion that both these stories are kind of useless, because DC revamped everything, and I can't see anybody going out of their way to wanting to read Legends other than an old fart like me who read it once upon a time in comic form. And really, it's a crossover, and they don't print the crossovers because some of the action occurs in the books. I did find it interesting why they didn't include Wonder Woman, because she'd just been launched by George Perez's new book. And while she appears in the end and disappears, they didn't want to have her there because they wanted Perez and company to be able to establish the character themselves for a while. Just a lot of these books that DC's just abandoned because they don't fit into current continuity. Why reprint them?
Get the John Byrne fanboys.
Yeah, but I bought this in a $5 bin in a reminder rack. So you would think after all the comic shops Corey and I visited, I'd had enough, but I didn't. So last Friday, I went down to visit our good buddies at Captain Jack down in Bloomington. He moved to a new store. The new store is bigger. It doesn't seem as well laid out. I don't know if it's because they're planning for FallCon. Nice guy there. I was digging through the 50-cent bins. I was able to finish my collection of Cerebus in Hell, which is cool. I dug through a bunch of 50-centers. Again, I'm looking. Part of what I'm doing is I'm trying to finish runs of books where I'm missing a single issue. Or pick up things that, for example, I'm missing a lot of Strangehaven, which was a series done by Gary Spencer Mildridge. And the only reason I want it is because it was billed as a cross between X-File and The Prisoner. And the books are expensive, but I was able to find the books I was missing in the 50-cent bins. I also picked up runs of Geeksville, you know, the aforementioned Richard Kowalski. We talked in the past about, remember French Ice? By, it was a Renegade Press title.
Yeah.
Trying to think of who. Lee Long, I guess, is the creator, artist, writer. I remember reading these and loving them. Well, what happened was, is as I finished digging through the 50-cent book, the guy at Captain Jack's, and I didn't catch his name, asked me, we got more 50-cent books, you want to look through them? And he did. He let me in the back room. I dug through a bunch more. I dropped about $50 on 50-cent books.
And you'll sell them for a buck.
Well, maybe, but there are things, you know, I picked up, like, Parts Unknown, Killing Attractions, a Bo Smith, Brad Gorby.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I picked up Dark Crossing, which was a crossover that Image did featuring Witchblade, Tomb Raider, and Darkness. Gilgamesh. If you remember that one from Jim Starlin, has one of the panels in there that spooks the living hell out of me to this day.
It was a weird book, too, because it just kind of came out of nowhere.
It did, and it really wasn't reprinted as far as I know. Aforementioned French Ice, I picked up a ton of those. I just had fun just picking up 50-cent books, which is part of my problem because then they'll turn around and be dollar books later on. But
hey, you're making a 100% profit.
It could be. I stopped at Hot Comics in Richfield, and I was able to – I complimented these guys because unlike some of the places we visited, these guys keep their back issues in order, immaculate. And I was able to find some books I thought I'd never find. Echo number 10. And now that was Terry Moore's book. And now, for some reason, I don't have issue 10. It was a 30-issue series. I'm missing issue 10. I found it. From our comics, I did not order Ariane Huntress number 4. I've got 1, 2, and 5, and 6. Now I've got the whole series, and I complimented those guys. Bionic Man vs. Bionic Woman number 3. Finally, I got it. I did screw up on one, though. I thought I was only missing in Fear Itself, The Fearless. I thought I was missing 4 and 6, which I was able to pick up. But I'm also missing 7. Damn it. So I also talked with the guys at Hot Comics. I introduced myself, and I was saying, you know, we're missing one piece of the Hot Comics story. How did the current owners buy Hot Comics from Kristen? What got their attention? I haven't been able to find Kristen. I guess she did move up to Grand Marais. See, some people get to go to the North Shore. And I guess that's where she's living now, so I may try to give her a call, or try to find the guys who do own Hot Comics. I guess they were at New Hope that day. So if we can, I'll try to find that, and we'll have the last piece, because we know how it was formed. We know what Pat and I got a hold of it. We know what happened when I sold it, when it kind of morphed into Christie's and kind of went back to Brian. I know when Kristen sold it, but I don't know how these guys, I mean, to me, they're like, they came out of nowhere and said, oh, we're buying a comic store. And Kristen was always more of a business person, not the Christie that bought Hot Comics and put it under, but the one who owned Hot Comics New Hope and then bought the Richfield location. So they gave me a lead, and I said, you know, we were talking, Adam was going to try to set me up before he moved down to Iowa. So hopefully we can get that final story. The last place I visited, Comic College of Knowledge, their new location, and it's really nice. High ceilings, beautiful layout, easy to find stuff. He's still working on getting everything arranged from the force move, but Corey, we're going to have to go visit at least these two stores again and see what you think. Sometime in the future when we got more donuts and we're ready to go geeking. Final geek, and it could be a freak because we'll know by the time this podcast drops with the new Star Trek Discovery is any good. They have the free one coming up. We'll have watched it, and of course I have no plans to buy the CBS to see the rest of it, but we'll see. I'm apprehensive about it, but then again, you know, we listen to people badmouth Next Gen, and that lasted 7 years.
Or the people who, Star Trek DS9, it's not a real Star Trek show because they don't have a ship.
Nope. What are you geeking on, Corey?
First thing I'm geeking on is, I'll get the TV stuff out of the way. Joe, you know the PW Insider, don't you?
I do, the premier wrestling place and the only place to get real wrestling news that isn't just made up.
I will be covering Impact Wrestling for them. I did it this week, and I'll do it next week.
Cool.
And it's the first time I've watched Impact Wrestling in over a year, and it wasn't terrible. Now, the first hour of the show had two matches, each of which were about 3 minutes long. But the second half of the show had some really good wrestling on it. I was pleasantly surprised, because when I quit watching it, it was like Botch City. And really, there was only one match that made me go, oh, God, just kill me. But if you head on over to PW Insider, you can see my humorous write-up of the latest episode of Impact Wrestling. Also, the new it's a new fall season, and one of the best shows of last year came back, and that is The Good Place, which is a comedy that I raved about last year. Do not watch the new season if you haven't watched the first season, and the first season is available on Netflix, because there are things in the first season that are spoiled for the second season. And it's not that you can't jump in and watch it, it's more you're going to miss out on some of the funniest stuff and the most inventive twists I've seen in a TV show in a long time. There are some game-changing twists in that first season where you just go, they did that. What? Including, I think, Ted Danson's best acting moment in history. But the second season started, and one of my friends asked if, oh, is every season going to be, you know, like blah, 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 blah? And first episode of the second season is, nope, we don't know what they're doing. And it's wonderful, and it's funny, but it's inventive and smart, and you have no idea what's going to come next. I like that. Comic-wise, Marvel Unlimited just threw up a whole bunch. No, they didn't vomit. That's Joe when I show him a picture of Deathmate, which we got a picture of you with your Deathmate. No, they just put up a whole bunch of Steve Gerber's She-Hulk, which I think is a very underrated series because it came after Byrne, when Byrne left in a huff, as he always does, and then Byrne came back and did some more before he left in a huff yet again. But Gerber brought in Howard the Duck. He brought in his sort of weird sensibility, played around with the Marvel Universe, and it reminded me a lot of his Defenders, where it's just he wants to play with the Marvel toys and see how much he can twist them. So if you've got Marvel Unlimited, head on out and read those Gerber She-Hulks. And then the latest issue of Amazing Spider-Man is a one-shot catching us up on what Norman Osborn has been up to. And it's probably one of the best Norman Osborn stories since he came back. I was very much against Norman Osborn coming back from the dead, but there have been a few stories where it's been worth it. And this issue of Amazing Spider-Man, the last before the renumbering, is phenomenal. Just phenomenal stuff. It's a done-in-one, and you'll love it. You'll just love it. It's very old-school Spider-Man. And the last thing is, I picked up those Kirby True Believers, and it reprints, like, first stories and things like that. If they got them at your shop, just grab those. Because it's not like, oh, here's the first Fantastic Four again. Here's the first this again. It's early Thor. It's early Inhumans. It's early Ant-Man and Wasp. And it's also the first issue of the Inhumans, the first issue of Devil Dinosaur. It's really phenomenal work, and it's a buck each. And I wish that comic shops would have just ordered like 50 each of them for the next 5-6 years. Hopefully Marvel will keep them on the shelf or figure out a way to keep them in print or something so that shops can continue to get them. But it was the DC one-shots that they did of Kirby characters, just fantastic, fantastic comics. And the last thing I'm going to recommend, there is a Dark Side one-shot written by Mark Evanier, which is quite possibly the greatest Dark Side story not by Kirby. And yes, I am counting the Legion of Superheroes stuff, and the Dark Side War, and Final Crisis. It's so good, just phenomenally good. Go get that comic. It's a one shot, done in one. Mark Evanier. I wish he would write more comics, but I know he makes a bajillion dollars more writing for TV. Believe it or not, kids. You've listened to us blather on about Duluth and comic books for over an hour and a half. And I don't know if Joe Zeeb is still with us anymore. But as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
What's Zantana's favorite holiday song? We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas.
You know, every woman I've dated, I always try and talk him into wearing a Zatanna costume. One of them did, and I have the pictures to prove it, and I am never sharing them with anybody.
Yeah, God, I have a dream. You did it last week. Do it again this week.
Yeah, that's your line. Do your line.
I don't
hit
wanna,
the
I
button,
know,
Frank.
Hit my music.
Done, bitches!